the intersection of law, regulation, and medical ethics when it comes to treating pain. That's the subject on this edition of the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. Jennifer Boland joins us, former assistant U.S. attorney for the Department of Justice and founder of the Legal Side of Pain. Jennifer, that intersection, I have a feeling we have a lot of wrecks in that intersection.
Yeah, we do. It's not unusual to have conflict when you're dealing with laws and regulations, physicians and their patients. It's a very difficult area.
Well, it would seem like we have a set of competing interests here. There's the law, or the war on drugs and substance abuse. Then there's another situation where there's the undertreatment of pain.
That's
and that
right.
complicates things, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. You've got a whole body of people that don't have their pain treated, and you have a limited body of clinicians that actually address chronic pain, and sometimes limited tools and resources in communities in terms of referrals, in terms of just time with patients, understanding about medications. And then you have folks that have substance abuse problems and, maybe even worse, they're out there actually just straight on diverting medications. And when all of that collides in the physician's office, it often puts people into they just freeze. They don't know what to do. And sometimes they take an easier route. It takes 30 seconds to write a script and tell somebody to go away. Or they do spend a lot of time and they catch flack on another end. And so very, very difficult area to navigate.
People, it seems, then are looking for relief and resolution of their pain. And if they don't get it in a doctor's office or elsewhere, they look to the law to be able to resolve that. There's not necessarily anything wrong with that, right?
Well, no. I mean, if there has been true legal harm, then there should be some sort of legal remedy. However, I think the real problem here is a lot more fundamental and goes to the understanding of what we're dealing with in terms of the relationship between the physician and the patient and how the laws can actually help protect both the physician and the patient in terms of what they can do, where the boundaries are. If you think of laws as boundaries or bookends, they're not meant to keep people closed in. They're meant to be there as a general guide. And, certainly some things are blatant. Don't sell drugs. Okay, well, when you're talking about selling things like prescription medications outside of a valid physician-patient relationship, that makes sense. But what is that valid physician-patient relationship? How do you get there? When has somebody not fulfilled it from a physician side? What about the patient responsibilities? Aren't they part of this process as well in terms of safe handling and storage of medication? All of these concepts still conflict together, and we still have a long way to go in terms of education and really speaking the same language about these issues would be very helpful as a start.
You're presenting today before a group involved with the Center for Practical Bioethics on pain policy, ethics around pain, et cetera. And one thing that you said today was that we've created a system of wandering souls.
Right.
Talk about that, if you would.
Well, when a patient goes to a physician to get something addressed in their life, let's say this chronic pain situation, and if after a period of time they don't get what they think they need and there hasn't been this dialogue between the physician and the patient, or if the patient thinks that they're complying and the physician thinks they're not, oftentimes there's a termination of care. They may be discharged or fired from a practice. That moves people on into other settings to try to find relief. It can even happen without a formal severing of the relationship. A patient can just become disenchanted with the relationship. There's not a good communication skill, so they go off and look for somebody else. When that happens, the patient file that follows the patient around can almost be a chain, a ball and chain on them, preventing them from getting good care, because then they're perceived perhaps as a doctor shopper. So these people are wandering around out there, and there's opportunists that will come in to try to take the place. Some people will have very good intents and other people won't, and that's what I mean by that there's, the pill mill problem has crept up, as well as the new practices that are trying to reach out and deal with this population, but they still don't have the resources, and we're right back to square one with a big collision or a train wreck, if you will.
There's a lack of education everywhere on this, but you as a former U.S. attorney were telling stories about how there's misunderstanding, perhaps myths within the legal community whenever it comes to this issue.
Yes, I think that we need to do a much better job of educating prosecutors and agents, law enforcement agents, about the true meaning of pain management and the fact that these medications that often get pulled into the mix don't create addicts in every person that uses them. And that's a common misperception, and it's a story that I told with a former colleague of mine. And it really shocked me that they, in 2011, after all this education, we went through the decade of pain control and research from 2001 on, you would think by now that we've got this message across, but that's not the case. And so it tells me we really need some fundamental education, and you need to have lawyers that are used to educating people, litigators, people that go in the courtroom that do understand this and do speak the language of pain. You need a little bit of their help to at least try to address that law enforcement attorney community.
Then it comes down to duties and obligations.
Right.
And that's an important aspect of it as well.
Yes. Yeah, it is. I think we need to do a better job of really telling the practitioners and the patients, here's what's supposed to happen. And then we need to do a better job of showing people how to do these things. The what and the how is critical in my mind. We have failed, I think, miserably in showing people how to communicate, how to take an electronic health record that's being forced through the system on these providers and make it work for them so that they can still engage with the patient face-to-face and not be sitting there on a computer clicking away and not even looking in the patient's eyes. That goes on a lot. I've personally experienced it. And by the same token, we need to also make patients understand that, you know, when they do receive medications, they have a responsibility to store them safely. If they have children in the house, especially young adults, that sort of thing, these are not things you just toss in a medicine cabinet and forget. If you have old medicines, you should be responsible to turn them in and whatnot. And we really need to step up that area of rights and responsibilities. We also need to make it clear to patients that doctors don't have to prescribe medications, especially if some of that prescribing is beyond the scope of their practice. If a person's in a higher dose of medication, it might not be the family physician that is comfortable doing that. They might need another person in that relationship, a pain specialist, to step in and help support the family physician, help support the patient, but to have an understanding of that at the beginning would be very helpful.
So how do we move forward then, Jennifer? How do we reach a point where there's, I guess, some accommodation between the legal community and the medical community so that in the middle the patient is someone who's able to benefit and get the pain treatment that they deserve?
I think it has to be a multi-pronged effort from a lot of different stakeholders, and I think that it would start by doing what I already do naturally. I look at what's out there from a federal law perspective. I look at the state law perspective. I see where there's similarities and dissimilarities, and as I teach physicians and patients, I try to show them that these are the boundaries, and here's what you need to do to fulfill those responsibilities, or you know, the boundaries to keep your license or keep your DEA registration, and here's what happens if you don't. And from a patient perspective, here's how you can really cultivate stronger patient relationships that can help keep you out of trouble. Because most often, the problems start for a physician when somebody reports them, when a patient's family member reports them, or somebody from a pharmacy reports them. If we can change the image of chronic pain management through just dialogue, the correct language, you know, not calling narcotic contracts, just even softening of some of that law enforcement vernacular, it'll be a step in the right direction. But we are going to have to do a lot of education on this, and one step at a time. It'll happen, just one step at a time.
Jennifer Bolin, former assistant U.S. attorney for the Department of Justice and founder of The Legal Side of Pain. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
My name is Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.